Hi. Welcome back to Legends of Surgery. I'm your host, Tyler Rouse. Today we're going to cover a fairly large topic, and I'll try to maintain a logical flow. But as regular listeners know, I do tend to go off on tangents, and there are a couple of interesting ones to pursue today, so this podcast will be a bit on the longer side. Now, this topic is an interesting one, and we will meet some definite legendary figures as we go along. So happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Let's get to it. Okay, the first thing to be said about cesarean sections is to clear up a common myth. The surgery is not named after Julius Caesar, and he most certainly wasn't born by cesarean section, as his mother, Aurelia Cotta, was alive when he was an adult and played a large role in his life. Now, since women did not survive cesarean sections in ancient Rome, it is felt by historians that Julius Caesar could not have been born this way. Now, some have traced this falsehood to a 10th century Byzantine Greek historical encyclopedia called the Suda. Amazing how that gets carried down through time. Alright, so let's go back to the cesarean section through history, and I'm going to shorten it to C-section, so when I say that, you know what I mean. Now, there are certainly accounts of it since ancient times. The oldest known account is from a cuneiform tablet from Mesopotamia around the 2nd millennium BC. Now, C-sections were often in parts of myths as well. For example, in Greek mythology, the god Asclepius, which you may have heard of, the god of medicine and healing, son of Apollo and the mortal woman Coronis, was born by C-section. Now, Coronis was killed for being unfaithful to Apollo and laid on a funeral pyre, but the unborn child Asclepius was cut from her womb by Apollo. First tangent. Asclepius had a number of children, and some of their names have come down to us. For example, his daughter Hygieia was the goddess of health, cleanliness, and hygiene, which is where that word comes from. And another daughter was Panacea, who was the goddess of universal remedy. One more thing. The symbol for medicine, a snake wrapped around a stick, comes from this myth. The stick is called the Asclepian, or Rod of Asclepius. Now, there are a few theories as to where this comes from, one of which is that a snake imparted secret knowledge to him. Another is that it represents the treatment of guinea worm, which is a parasite that is removed by slowly winding the worm around a stick from its site of rupture through the skin. Second tangent, former President Jimmy Carter, actually, his foundation is trying to eradicate guinea worm in Africa, which is pretty amazing. Okay. Another theory is that it's from the fact that snakes shed their skin and so represent rejuvenation. Regardless, there's a common confusion that should be cleared up. So the stick with a single snake is the true symbol. Some associations, you may have noticed, use a stick with two snakes and a pair of wings. This is, in fact, the symbol for Hermes, the messenger of the Greek gods. This has been traced to the U.S. Army Medical Corps adopting this symbol in 1902 on the insistence of a single officer. It's thought that he assumed a medical connection after seeing that symbol as a printer's mark in 19th century medical texts. Weird, right? Okay, so continuing with the ancient historical theme, C-sections were typically done to retrieve the infant from a dead or dying mother, either as a last-ditch attempt to save the baby, or so that it could be buried separately from the mother based on religious practices. The Romans actually had a law called the Lex Caesarea, established in the time of Numa Pompilius, which is 715 to 673 BC, and was actually the second king of Rome, which is well before Julius Caesar, stating that if a pregnant woman died, the baby had to be taken from her womb, or uterus, as their customs forbade the burial of a pregnant woman. The law also required that a living mother be in her 10th month, or 40 to 44th week of pregnancy, before the procedure could be attempted, as the chance of surviving was basically nil. So I wondered why the law was called Caesarea, and his name is Julius Caesar. Well, it turns out that the Latin verb to cut is sado, C-A-E-D-O. And babies born by C-section from deceased mothers are called caesones. Now here's the odd part. Where did Julius Caesar's name come from then? Well, Caesar was actually a family name, and Pliny the Elder, a Roman writer, stated that one of Julius Caesar's remote ancestors was born by C-section and became the first person to bear the name Caesar, that, quote, was so named from his having been removed by an incision in his mother's womb, end quote. Now, for completeness sake, this may not even be true, as there are a number of other theories of the name origin which we won't get into. So the next step in our history of the C-section is to determine the first successful one, defined as both the mother and child surviving. The first credible tale comes not from a physician or surgeon, but from a Swiss pig gelder named Jakob Neufer. Around 1500, in the town of Siegershausen, Mr. Neufer's wife labored for several days and had 13 midwives fail to deliver the baby. So he stepped in with his knife, after getting permission from the local authorities, and removed the baby himself. The baby survived, and the mom went on to have 5 more children, including twins, and lived to the age of 77. Now, this event wasn't recorded until 1582, so some question its accuracy. Okay, another minor tangent. The procedure was called the caesarean operation until the 16th to 17th century, when a book on midwifery written in 1598 by Jacques Guillemot introduced the term section. I'm not even sure why. Okay, so as we approach the modern era, a few more historical notes. Apparently not a single woman survived a C-section in Paris between 1787 and 1876. That's nearly 100 years. The mortality for the procedure in Great Britain and Ireland in 1865 was quoted as 85%. I assume this means the mother, but it wasn't clear. However, there are a few success stories from the 19th century, interestingly coming to us from Africa. So one of these comes from Uganda, where a British missionary and physician, R.W. Falcon, witnessed a C-section in 1879 performed by Banyaro tribe surgeons, which evidently they'd been practicing for centuries. Here's the account. It's a long one, but I'll read it to you because it's amazing. Quote, "The patient was a healthy-looking prima para, first pregnancy, of about 20 years of age, and she lay on an inclined bed, the head of which rested against the side of the hut. She was half intoxicated with banana wine, was quite naked, and was tied down to the bed by bands of bark cloth over the thorax, meaning chest, and thighs. Her ankles were held by a man, while another man stood on her right, steadying her abdomen. The surgeon was standing on her left side, holding the knife aloft and muttering an incantation. He then washed his hands and the patient's abdomen, first with banana wine and then water. The surgeon made a quick cut upwards from just above the pubis, which is like the pubic hair region, to just below the umbilicus, the belly button, severing the whole abdominal wall and uterus so that amniotic fluid escaped. Some bleeding points in the abdominal wall were touched with red-hot irons. The surgeon completed the uterine incision, womb cut, the assistant helping by holding up the sides of the abdominal wall with his hand and hooking two fingers into the uterus. The child was removed, the cord cut, and the child handed to an assistant," end quote. So the rest of the description talks about squeezing the uterus to make it contract, taking out the placenta and blood clots, using the hot iron to control bleeding, and closing the wounds with sharp spikes, finally putting a root paste and cloth bandage over everything. The mother and child were alive and well 11 days afterwards, according to this physician. Now that was a long description, but think about the surgical principles demonstrated. Anesthesia and antisepsis with banana wine, controlling of bleeding with cautery, wound care. Wow. Now another story from Africa was the first successful C-section in the British Empire, which was done in Cape Town by surgeon James Barry. This was in 1826, and the child, a boy, was named Barry. So that's kind of boring, right? But here's the thing. I was going to cover James Barry in episode 10 on imposters, but there wasn't time. Why? Because James Barry was born Margaret Ann Bulkley in 1789 in Ireland. She was raised a girl until going to medical school in Edinburgh, effectively changing genders on the boat ride there from London, where she'd been living with her uncle, named James Barry. He had recently passed away, and so she took on his name. At a time when women weren't allowed at medical schools, this was quite the plan. She passed her exams and went on to a respectable career in the British Army, even serving at the Battle of Waterloo and bouncing around different colonies, including this one, Canada. She retired at the age of 65 somewhat reluctantly, and it wasn't until her death that the nurse looking after her body informed the authorities that he was a she. Now there's a lot more to that story, and I encourage you to go look it up if you're so inclined. Alright, home stretch here. I think we should take a step-by-step approach to the operation itself and describe the various improvements that led to the modern version of the C-section and the historical changes that were made. So let's think of the operation in three steps. So first is the opening incision of the skin and abdominal wall. Second is the opening of the uterus, and third is the closure of the uterus. So throughout most of the described history of C-sections, a number of approaches were taken to open up the abdomen, mostly borrowed from general surgery. So these were typically vertical or up and down, either to the left or right of the midline of the body or through the midline. Even an oblique or angled incision was tried. So the problem with these was that they caused hernias or defects in the sewn-up incision, or damage to the bladder, or heavy bleeding. Now some of you may have heard of the fan and steel incision, which is a low transverse or side-to-side incision, sometimes called the bikini line incision. Now this was already being used on the skin in the late 19th century, but fan and steel introduced the idea of opening up the next layer, called fascia, which overlies the abdominal muscles in a transverse or side-to-side fashion too. Previously this had been opened vertically or up and down, so this new approach allowed for a more secure closure, less post-operative pain, and a better cosmetic result. So let's take a minute to meet the man behind the name. So Hermann Johannes Fahnestiel was a German gynecologist born in Berlin on June 28, 1862. Now, I won't bore you with the details of his academic achievements, but just know that he had a successful, if brief, career. The seminal paper on his incision was called, and this is translated from the German, quote, on the advantages of the symphyseal transverse fascial incision for gynecological ciliotomies, which means abdominal openings, as well as the contribution to the surgical indications, end quote. Again, I don't think that title would pass the journal's editorial board these days. So it was published in 1900, and it described 51 cases. Now the reason his career was so short was tragic. While performing a routine operation removing an abscess of the fallopian tube, he pricked his finger and died a few days later of septicemia, this being the age before antibiotics. He was 47 years old. Another interesting, if unfortunate, historical note on his family. His only son, Wilhelm Hermann van der Steel, was also a doctor. Now, he joined the Nazi Party in 1933 and became an SS officer in 1934 and was connected to a concentration camp and may have had some involvement in criminal medical experiments on prisoners. Now, as far as I can tell, he was interned by the Americans after the war but not convicted and went on to direct a vaccine division at a German pharmaceutical company. His son Peter was a professor of medicine and thyroid expert. All right, now let's look at the uterine or womb incision. In the early days, most surgeons used a vertical or up and down incision. Although this helped to avoid damaging structures at the side of the uterus, including some major blood vessels, it did cause more severe bleeding, risked injury to the bladder and vagina, and maybe most importantly, put the mother at risk for uterine rupture after subsequent deliveries. This means that when the mother would go into labor and her uterus started to contract, it could blow a hole in it, causing major bleeding and putting the baby's life at risk. One of the early solutions to this problem was proposed by Dr. Eduardo Porro, an Italian obstetrician. His contribution was to remove the uterus, ovaries, and fallopian tubes after the C-section, rendering the mother infertile and putting her into early menopause, but it was at least effective for stopping fatal hemorrhaging. Quick side note. Fallopian tubes are so named after their discoverer, the 16th century Italian anatomist Gabriel Fallopio. Seriously, that's true. Okay. Now, fortunately, Dr. Porro's operation was not required for very long, as a new approach to opening the uterus came along. On September 25th, 1881, Dr. Ferdinand Adolf Carrer performed what is considered the first modern C-section in a town called Meckesheim in Germany. And I may be saying that wrong. Instead of the up-and-down incision of the uterus, he did what's called a transverse or side-to-side incision of the lower segment of the uterus. This reduces bleeding and allows for better healing, reducing the risk of rupture later. Dr. John Martin Monroe Kerr, a Scottish obstetrician, was often given credit for popularizing this technique in 1926 when he presented it to the American Gynecological Society in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. I'm not sure if he improved on it or just borrowed it from the Germans, but certainly this was considered a major advancement in surgical technique. So this may seem hard to believe now, especially to those of you that may have seen a C-section or two, but for centuries, the belief was that the uterus incision would close on its own, and that because it's a large muscle that contracts and expands, suturing would be ineffective. In fact, because sutures had to be removed, this wasn't tried on the uterus as they couldn't be taken out once the abdomen was closed. That is, until Max Sanger. Dr. Sanger was a German obstetrician that in 1882 introduced the idea of suturing the uterus closed. What allowed him to do this was the use of silver sutures, which could be left inside and didn't require removal. Now, the use of silver suture material came from Dr. James Marion Sims, an American doctor considered the father of modern gynecology. If you've ever heard of a Sims retractor in gynecology, same guy. I will do a separate podcast on him as he is definitely worthy of one. Okay, final note. C-sections up to the 19th and 20th centuries was a fairly rare operation as most women did not require intervention. However, as the populations of developed countries became more urban, the children in the cities had less and less sunlight exposure. This meant less activated vitamin D, which led to higher rates of rickets, a disease of bone formation. When the female children reached childbearing age, their pelvises were malformed, making vaginal delivery more difficult. The rates of C-sections skyrocketed. But by the 1930s, with milk becoming available in schools, the rates of rickets dropped. However, C-section rates did not. And there's certainly debate about the necessity of all C-sections performed today, but regardless of how you feel about this, the operation has saved the lives of countless mothers and children and remains one of the most important developments in surgery. That wraps up another episode of Legends of Surgery, and I hope you enjoyed it. Next week is Nurses Week here in Canada and the US, so I thought we'd cover one of the most famous nurses in history who could be considered a trauma nurse specialist, at least for part of her career, so please join us then. I promise that one will be a bit shorter. Please rate the podcast on iTunes and leave a comment there, or follow me on Twitter at Surgery Legends. like us on Facebook at Legends of Surgery, or send an email to legendsofsurgery@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on the podcast or ideas for future episodes. As always, thanks for listening.